Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big and ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Okay, let me check if there's an agent assigned to your file. Hold for a moment.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 441 for the week of January 9th, 2023. My doc says 22. I caught it. It's 23.
Good job.
I am aggressive blue color grading David T. Cole, and I'm here with Warden Auntie Sarah D. Bunting.
I've got your darkness right here, young lady.
Mystical records clerk Tara Ariano.
Hold for a moment, I said.
And urinating tech bro Eve Beatty.
Maybe I can use magic instead of washing my hands.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week, for a new year, as far as we are concerned. We never stopped bringing you new stuff, but we did take close to 6 weeks off of taping, so if this one is a little shaggy, that's why. We may have forgotten how to do all of this. Speaking of forgetting things and disappointing everyone, I have a correction to the New Year's Eve game time. One of my notes was that the prize pack was going to be something tiger themed because 2023 is the year of the tiger. It's not at all. It's the year of the rabbit. I don't know what I was looking at. Perhaps I forgot what year we were going into, which is quite possible. So I apologize. I wish I had done better. The other correction I have is that I referred to the only Friends episode to take place on New Year's Eve and a question about who kissed whom. There was another one that I didn't remember until Nickelodeon started doing their Friends holiday episode marathons in December. And so I think the first answer that Dave gave in that one would have been correct for that other episode that I was thinking of, but regardless, he still won the game, so it didn't affect the outcome. Sorry. However, for winning, he did get a prize. What did you get, Dave?
Well, because it was the year of the tiger.
Yeah.
As we all know.
Sorry.
As predicted on the actual episode, I did receive Frosted Flakes because, frankly, they're great.
They are great.
Also included a small jar of Tiger Balm. Mm-hmm. And let me just tell you, together, they taste terrible.
Yeah.
Speaking about two things that don't taste terrible. Great segue, Dave. Thanks.
Yeah.
Extra Hot Great now has a new website. It is still at extrahotgreat.com. But if you visit, it's all new and fast and shiny. Fixed a lot of missing pieces of data while we were doing it. So check that out. And while you're there on the sidebar, you may notice that there is a store link because we now have a merch store for Extra Hot Great at all. You can go directly to throughmethods.com. That's through spelled like properly, not like I'm going in the drive-through, not like that. We've got one sort of sub-store for every one of our podcasts, including Extra Hot Great. You can pick yourself up a Extra Hot Great logo shirt, a shirt and some other stuff. Check out the other stories while you're there. There's sort of a mini Clarkware revival for those that are old and remember what that is. There's some stuff there. And I am taking requests. So if there's something from the past, you're like, I sure would like that shirt again. Hit me up and let me know. And finally, as part of that new site, we are off our old ad provider. We're at someplace new that is also doing the hosting. So the RSS has already changed and is the last little piece of it is going to be turned off in a couple of weeks. I only say this because I think I covered all the bases, but there's always that one or two people that manage to subscribe to some RSS feed that is like 24 years old and is about to get truly deep sixth. So if you happen to be listening and then 1 week we're like not there anymore, it's because you were listening to some archaic old feed that somehow we didn't catch. Just go to extrahotgreat.com, resubscribe, and you're golden. But for 99.99999% of you, I think we are golden.
We are here to talk about the Mayfair Witches with our guest. She is the co-author of the Best Evidence newsletter. It's Eve Beatty. Welcome back, Eve.
Eve. Yay!
Mayfair Witches involves Rowan Fielding, Alexandra Daddario. She is a brilliant neurosurgeon in San Francisco, and around the time that she and her mother, Ellie, Erica Gimple, are celebrating the anniversary of Rowan's adoption, Rowan gets into a conflict at work with an older male colleague who undervalues her. While they're talking and she's sending hate rays at him through her uncanny ice blue eyes, he is suddenly overcome with a neurological event. Rowan becomes convinced that she caused it, despite Ellie's attempts to talk her down. Ellie has her own problems anyway. The cancer that was in remission is back. And as we cut back and forth between timelines and between San Francisco and New Orleans, we learn that there is more to Rowan's origin story than Ellie ever told her. Only one episode has aired so far on AMC. We did get access to more. We will be cool about spoilers. Let's do the Chen check-in. Eve, should our listeners watch Mayfair Witches?
Nah.
Sarah.
Sure.
Dave.
Kind of with Sarah. It's like, it's skippable. It didn't grab me like Interview with the Vampire, but like it was like passable.
I wouldn't go that far. I'm a hard no. This is very bad in my opinions. Let's get into why. Eve, I had thought of you for this because the action takes place partly in your town and because you were on our last Witch episode when we talked about the revivals of Charmed and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
It's because she's a witch, you guys.
Also because she's a witch.
Make that explicit.
When I texted you, that's when I found out you are also an Anne Rice head from way back. So as a book series, where would you rank Mayfair Witches in her canon? When researching this, I learned that the first book is over 1,000 pages and was shocked.
Eve, you used to live in San Francisco. Do you call yourself Rice-a-ronies?
Oh, wow. Wow. I wonder how many times Anne Rice heard that while she lived in San Francisco.
Well, she's dead, so I'm asking you.
That's true. Yeah, she's not here shit now.
And if she weren't, that joke would have killed her, just so we're clear.
No, and those Rice-a-roni jokes about San Francisco never get old, so thank you for that, Dave.
Thank you.
I really
they
appreciate
are
it.
Let's call it Frisco. Yeah. They love that.
They are a treat.
You know, no, we're cool with Frisco. I'm not going to go on the tangent. Frisco is actually fine, though. San Fran's the problem. So what was the question? I'm sorry.
where would you rank this book series in her canon?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that. Because I had to go back and I knew that I had read at least the first book in the trilogy and I could remember none of it. And I felt better when I went back to Wikipedia and realized it came out in 1990 when we were all basically infants. So like the thing about Anne Rice is I think it's like Bukowski or Hunter Thompson or something. You read it at the right point in your life. It's like super influential. Mm-hmm. But if you keep reading it after a certain point in your life, it's sad. You're that guy in the hat at the bar.
Yeah.
And if you stumble across Anne Rice like too late in life, you're never going to get into it. So, I mean, Interview, I think, hit me at the right time. I read it when I was way too young. I shouldn't have read it when I read it, probably in the very early 80s. Of course, Interview was such a huge deal because, I was a kid and all the vampire books felt so great. And then she got shaggier and shaggier too, use a term you used earlier. It just everything got more and more bloated when she was more successful. And you could tell that editors were less inclined to say nope.
Yeah.
And that's around the time, too, that they started, re-releasing her other stuff under her other names. And there was just sort of, this Anne Rice sort of market glut right around then. This is around the time a lot of people sort of quit Anne Rice and probably never really went back.
Yeah. We'll link to an article that was in Salon this week where the author had gone to her archives at Tulane and, read a bunch of her journals to try and see, to glean, what would she have thought of this adaptation? And by Anne Rice's own self-description, she was bored by writing about women and sort of it didn't really spark to this project herself until she created the male character who I guess in the show is now a composite and we'll get to him and his stupid name. Sarah, as I noted up top, we have Alexandra Daddario playing an extraordinarily talented brain surgeon. How would you rate her effectiveness in a doctor role on a scale of 1 to 10? Kelly Riley in Black Box, of course, being -12.
A 4, but it's not her fault.
No.
I would say about this on the positive side, despite the fact that my sense of where they were shooting is that they just took the Teddy Perkins house from Atlanta. And shot everything there. And then occasionally there was some CGI fog. Look how Frisco-y it is. Oh, my God. And also, when are we? Some of these flashbacks that should have technically been happening in, what, the 90s, the 90s. Or early aughts? Yeah. But it looks like Eudora Welty puked all over the wardrobe department. But I will say that Alexandra Daddario is, to me, surprisingly affecting, given that she's disgorging a huge amount of exposition that isn't clear even to her, and has to sell that she's a neurosurgeon who's also great with kids and all of this. Like, I think that it, you know, this isn't for me, but I think its pacing for what it is pretty effective. And there's like a bunch of people in the acting corps that I thought were like, Harry Hamlin's concept of the New Orleans accent should not have been entertained. Like, just let him be Harry Hamlin. We all know who it is. It's always nice to see Jack Huston. I liked him a lot in Boardwalk Empire. Erica Gimple is pretty good. I love that she has this one scene where she's like, give me a break with your like hallucinating your own shadow nonsense. I'm trying to die of cancer over here. Like, fair. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are, I think there are things to like about this if you are either predisposed to or like trying to like this show. Like, if you go into it like, I want to watch this show, this is for me.
Yeah.
There's stuff here to keep you like linked to it and keep you going, keep you like hooked in until the end. But if it's not for you, it's not enough, I would say. Like, yeah. I don't think it's bad. I wasn't as repelled by it as you were, Tara, but it's like everybody's doing the best they can, but it's not everything is for everyone deal, in my opinion.
Everything needed to be more.
Yes.
Like, the general tone of the Anne Rice universe as depicted on TV, I've never read, you know, the books, but like Interview the Vampire had an energy to it that this one doesn't. Like, this one.
Totally.
And
totally.
And the fact that everything is color graded the deepest blue I've ever fucking seen on TV, like, just adds to the sort of like energy of this thing. You've got an adoption agency that is exclusively for like supernatural beings or witches or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it is just so fucking boring there. Like, that should have been like, you know, like it should have had some Harry Potter energy, not like kid friendly, but it should have had some sort of like, oh, this is like some up-tempo sort of things going on. You've got like all these like crazy characters, you know, there's all this sort of like seduction going on, and it is all just sort of very monotone in this pilot episode. And you can see the beats, but they're just not like, they're not in sync. They're not loud enough. Something's wrong there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I wanted to like it. Like, I really, really liked Interview with the Vampire very, very much.
Yeah, same.
But this was so, it was so, yeah, Dave's right. It was so blah. And it also felt like it was just taking forever to get to the witch factory. Like, it wasn't enough. The pilot didn't get us far enough. It felt like half of the story to like get you hooked. You know what I mean? Despite being overlong as well.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like Anne Rice is outre. Mm-hmm. And I think if you don't embrace that part of it and you're sort of like, well, structurally in the fourth act, like, I think it has to be much more like Interview with the Vampire, which understood, like, it had an ear for its own derangement.
Yes.
Way better than this does.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I liked it, that it was like confident and had a sense of humor about the source material in a way that this is just much more subdued, and I don't think the source material is about that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, 1,000 pages? No, this is not a subdued person.
It's going to have to be more subdued, though, because the book and, like, the storyline is, and I'm sure we all went and looked at the Wikipedia, right? It's, like, super problematic. I mean, Anne Rice is problematic in general, right? That's one of the reasons that I think that the reboot of Interview with the Vampire is so successful, is because they threw so much of, like, the really, really bad racial and, like, ownership of humans stuff that was in Interview and like the subsequent books, all this like, oh, the mulattoes and other words that are even more horrifying.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that's even worse in the Mayfair Witches books. Like, it is incest, rape that turns into pleasure, which I think we all know, no, that doesn't happen. Like, repeated, like, the Lasher character, which I know we're going to get to, kidnaps Rowan and rapes her and forcibly impregnates her, like, again and again and again, and it's, like, sexy. Meanwhile, there's this, like, sort of male hero, like, Rowan's, like, boyfriend in the book, who ends up, like, fucking a 13-year-old, and it's good.
Jeez.
And it's, you know, awesome, and he knocks her up, and, you know, they create this whole other breed of witches and all this, and, like, this is something that, look, if they said, like, if they had, like, if AMC hired Gaspar Noé and said, all right, Gaspar Noé is the guy who did, like, Irreversible and, I don't know, like, a bunch of other, like, problematic stuff. But if they hired, like, him or even, like, David Cronenberg, he's Canadian, they could just move to Vancouver. Or even David Cronenberg's kid, right? Because Cronenberg's kid's basically, like, Cronenberg 2.0. But you know what I mean? Like, if they handed it to someone like that and said, all right, really go for it, but get rid of the stuff that's a problem. Like, I understand that, like, Mayfair Witches is, like, AP, but I don't think it's a recognizable brand that, you know, we really need to hang on to. Like, just dump it and say, we're going to do a witch show and it's going to have these people in it and it's going to be like this and throw, you know, say inspired by the Mayfair Witches. But this is, people who are into these books are going to be pissed at the show because it's toothless, because it feels like the CW traded DC for, like, witches. And then people who aren't into, like, all that dark stuff are so well served by so many other better products from, like, A Discovery of Witches, which is not a great show, but is less cheesy than this and covers, like, the witch thing, or Legacies, or even, like, Motherland Fort Salem. I sound like I'm, like, a super witch head. I'm not, but it's just, like,
there
I
are a lot, like, yeah.
There are a lot, there are so many, like, we're kind of at peak witch right now anyway. And plus, we have, like, shows like Evil, which I know everybody talks about. I think I even, like, brought it up on and Around the Dial, like, a couple of times ago. You know, everyone always talks about Evil on this show. Evil is maybe, like, the smartest supernatural-based show going right now. If you've got all that, then this show just feels like, you know, Diet Kirkland soda in comparison.
Yeah, the CW analogy is well taken. When I was discussing this back in December with past and future guest Allison Herman from The Ringer, that was what she said, that someone, a friend of hers who had watched it, said it's very CW-y, and that I feel like it is. Like, it feels cheap in that way. Like I'm not surprised that you were surprised that they really shot in New Orleans, because it does just look like Vancouver, and part of that is the color grading, but part of that is just it looks sort of... It just looks faintly cheap in that way. And all of the actors who are not people we've ever seen before are just, like, not up to any kind of challenge. Speaking of the actors, let's get into it. We have the composite character that I referred to earlier. We have Tongai Chiriza. He is a composite of Michael Curry and Aaron Leitner. And his character name is Cyprian Grieve, as in the verb. And when I found out that was a made-up name for this show, it was not from the Anne Rice book, I was like, you are really taking liberties, Esta Spalding. Like, that's a little too crazy for you. It felt like that was kind of a wild reach. But anyway, this is the person who's, like, the caseworker for Rowan. And he didn't get much to do in the premiere, but presumably will be a bigger presence going forward.
Well, if he's the composite of those guys, he's the ostensible romantic interest. I say this having only watched the first episode, so if I predicted something that was in the other episodes, it was pure chance. But so if the idea is they're going to hook, then he's the guy who has sex with a 13-year-old, which they're not going to do on this show. I guarantee it. Yeah.
Jack Houston is Lasher. You already brought him up, Eve. Your thoughts?
Well, I know what the Lasher character is, and, you know, he's no good, but it's, like, the whole, like, Anne Rice thing where she just thinks that guys that want to kill you are the sexiest thing on earth, which always, like, made me feel bad, like, for her husband, who's a very nice, regular guy who taught at SF State. You know, Lasher's the guy, the sexy, charming rapist, and it's like, what are you going to do with that? And then, I mean, that actor who I think is fine, you know, that he was saddled with some of, I feel, the most egregious stuff in his sort of, like, big reveal speech there. I felt bad for him. I just felt bad for that guy. I felt bad for his greasy hair. We're going to talk about Slow Horses in a little bit, and it made me think of Gary Oldman's hair in Slow Horses.
Harry Hamlin, we already touched on. He seems to be having fun. And
I declare!
I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
In the book, that man is a homosexual. I'll just point that out. So if Harry Hamlin's going to play gay, I might stick around, but probably not.
He seemed pretty gay in this one. He was like vetting guys, yeah, having someone rub his feet. So
pioneering moment in his career 40 years ago.
So. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Annabeth Gish and Beth Grant both deserve better than what they were given in this pilot.
Oh, God.
And what they were given were contact lenses.
Yeah.
It's time to go around the dial. First up is...
Well, this now feels like a historical relic, but back in December, I watched Harry and Meghan, which is the 6-part Netflix doc series about the titular prince and his wife, the Sussexes. And at the time, I was a little worried about how to talk about this because I feel like their attitude is any critiques about their public comportment is violence against them. But then last week, the leaks from Harry's new memoir started coming out. He was interviewed on 60 Minutes. Last weekend, and now based on at least my social media following, it seems like everyone's over them and we're all on the same page that they need to shut it. But going back to that show, you know, as we all know, they quit the royal family in 2020. Oprah interviewed them for CBS News the following year, and that was when they first talked about racist incidents involving members of his family. And racist coverage of her in particular by the British press were obviously public and had started like as soon as their couplehood was announced. And, you know, I thought the Oprah interview caught me up on their deal. I guess they thought there was more to say. So they are producers on this show. And they had made a deal with Netflix as part of their, you know, promise when they announced that they were leaving their official duties to work toward financial independence. But like nothing else that they've done has really popped. Like, they had made this Netflix deal. They were going to do a kids show. It got canceled pre-release. Meghan narrated a Disney movie about elephants. She launched a podcast late last year that apparently is good. I haven't listened to it. But between this and the book, it kind of seems like nothing they have to bring the public has more value than stories about these outrages. And, like, they're super juicy. I get why they keep, like, rolling them out. I don't not read about them. Like, I'm a gossip monger. I guess I'm part of the problem. But because they're producers on the series, you have to, it's impossible not to notice how they're manipulating their own story, you know, to favor themselves, obviously. Like, the first episode covers Harry's philanthropic work in Botswana at length. And because they jump around, like, chronologically, it's not until a subsequent episode, I don't even remember if it was episode 2. It might have been later that they talk about him wearing the Nazi costume to that party. And the way it's framed is like, you know, he's more aware now of his unconscious biases and so forth from being in a relationship with her. But like, it happened in 2005. Like, we already knew at that point. That's not cool to do.
Yeah. That's why we call them Nazis and not flower girls. What are you... Yeah.
Had he not seen Harry, like Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I don't know. So excellent points are made about how precisely the hate campaigns were targeted against Meghan online and how the royal family works with the press to plant stories. There's definitely been more of that in the last week. Discussing that, I mean, including against members planting stories against one another. But as a viewer, I was like, and like, I'm sure his family are a bunch of horrible racists. I believe there was and is an organized effort to smear them online. But there's no one inside the project pushing them to think like one step further and make the outrages signify beyond their gossip value. Like, no one's asking Meghan if everything she went through has been worth it. No one uses the phrase trauma bonding to describe what they went through. And I really feel like they should. Like, there are points where it seems like they're circling around a good point to make, but then they don't home in on it. Like, the filmmakers get Serena Williams to comment on having gone to their wedding. Like, you think she doesn't have things to say about misogynoir online and in the world? Because I bet she does. Or, you know, we get to Meghan's support of this mosque that several families who'd been displaced by the Grenfell Tower fire belonged to, and she helped them produce a cookbook to raise money for their community kitchen. And then when the press found out Meghan was working with them, stories started appearing about members of the mosque having ties to terrorist organizations. Like, Meghan's had a hard time. Any of these women has had a harder time. Like,
yeah.
Any one of them, and they could have made a documentary about them, and telling that story would have had greater educational value than, you know, their own story, which ultimately just boils down to their inability to see past themselves. Like, Harry will not even go so far as to say he thinks the monarchy should be abolished. Like, I feel like that's the end where it's like, okay, we're done here. Like, they've spent 8 TV hours to date. There's also a Hulu doc I just found out. There's this book. They've excavated their own story a bunch. That's enough. And they need to stop. And I feel like culturally everyone is in agreement about this. But anyway, that's Harry and Meghan for now. Hopefully that's the end of it, but I somehow doubt it. I had a few things come out over the break, but the most recent was that for Cracked.com, where my old Mel editor is now working, I wrote a list of the 10 funniest TV shows of 2022, which is objectively correct in its ranking and choices. And we will link that in the show notes.
All right, Eve, what do you have for us?
I can't do a nonstop binge of one show anymore. I don't have the attention span for it, even if it's the best thing on earth. I just can't stick with the same thing. I'm no longer monogamous, I guess. I need to come up with pairings. Like, I can sit and watch TV for 9 hours, but I need to mix it up and have different things. So that's why I'm talking about Slow Horses and The Circle right now. So I'm talking about Slow Horses season 2 and The Circle, which is now at season 5. First show is, it's an Apple TV series. It's in its second season. It's about the Bad News Bears of MI5. They're a bunch of fuck-ups. They're led by Gary Oldman, who is very filthy looking on the show. I think we know that Oldman in real life, he's a very problematic person. He's accused of domestic violence. He's a self-described libertarian. He is one of those guys that anytime you can interview with him, he whines about how you can't say anything anymore. Oh, that's so hard. You're so privileged. Shut up.
Yeah.
And I'll just point out that he and Uma Thurman got together when she was a teenager and he was in his 30s. So, you know, I'm sure she had her own agency and all that, but still, yikes. So that's Gary Oldman, but he is so good on this show.
That's the problem.
I know, right? I saw, Tara, in like your list of shows that you guys had watched this over the break too. So yeah. Because the whole time I was watching, even more so than season 1, I was thinking like, gosh, I bet Dave really likes this show because it is sort of like the, you know, this season I felt was a little more tradecraft or spycraft or whatever heavy. But still, like, there's like plenty of like king of the fuck ups, miserable person, but he's not like elevated. Like, if this were a US show, he'd somehow still be like the hero and like a lovable, hey, it's Don Draper. He's amazing, even though he's horrible. But they walk this really incredible line, I feel, in this season where he's not sympathetic, but you still enjoy watching him the whole time. And he says, oh, you can clean coats. God, that killed me. Oh my God, that was so good. And I felt like, especially this season, there is such this great theme of women being underestimated and how like inherent misogyny like puts us at, you know, risk, not just of like being assholes and bad people, but also of like death. And I thought that that was like fun and interesting. Then let's talk about The Circle. Nothing happens every episode, which is so great. And this is also, this began as a British show. This is the one where a bunch of ding-dongs are in like sort of luxury, solitary confinement. They're in apartments that look like, you know, Instagrammable Airbnbs. But each person's sort of alone, except under very specific circumstances. And their only stimulation is that every once in a while, a screen will come on and they'll be like, oh, you have to like have like a screaming text, like voice to text covers. It's like you're driving where you're like, you know, please pick up the hot sauce for the egg sandwich, send or whatever. But it's like, you know, we're interacting with people. We're trying to figure out if they're imposters. I'm a catfish and I don't want people to know. And all they're doing is screaming into the screen, describing emojis. They're all ding dongs. Did I mention that? Most of them don't wear clothes. This season, there is someone who does not hear, and her interpreter, her sign language interpreter, is also living with her, which is an interesting twist. And also the person who does not hear is really the best and most likable person on the show. So that's interesting. It is one of the most racially diverse shows that I think you can find on Netflix right now, too. And nothing happens. And all you think is, we are pack animals. It is fascinating watching all of this stuff about how people act when they are stuck alone, how much they freak out, how paranoid they get. It's a lot like Slow Horses in that sort of regard. they're going insane in nice apartments somewhere in England. And so the two, I just strongly recommend that if you're going to watch one of these shows, you watch both of them at the same time, because there's an acid salt, like heat sort of combination between the three of them that makes, that I feel enhances the each, you know, the other show. They play off each other better than, they're stronger together than apart, I guess is what I'm saying.
And for your plug.
And for my plug, I am plugging my loft in Indianapolis. I am a terrible person. I have an Airbnb. If you ever have a reason to visit Indianapolis for business or pleasure, please consider staying at my Airbnb. I bought a 115-year-old loft last year so I'd have a place to live when I visit my family who lives here. I wanted to see them more after my dad died, but staying at my mom's house or my sister's house just became too much because I'm someone who works remotely. So I figured out a way to buy this old loft in downtown Indianapolis. And the way that I was able to buy it is that I short-term rent it out to folks when I'm not here. It's a really great place. And I know that Extra Hot Great listeners would be terrific guests because some of my favorite customers at my shop in San Francisco, which is called Avenues Dry Goods, I'm going to get in a plug for that too, are people who listen to the show. In fact, my last customer of the year was an Extra Hot Great listener who stopped by and picked up a basket. Yeah, it was absolutely wonderful. It was a terrific way to end the holiday season. And so if you are looking for a place to stay when you come to Indianapolis, it's Mass Ave Loft, massavloft.com, Mass Ave Loft on Instagram. Come check it out and come stay with me.
Faraday Bunting.
Hello. I'm here to talk about Kaleidoscope. This is basically Choose Your Own Leverage / Interrogations 11, starring Gus Fring and one of the men who was near the High Castle, a.k.a. Giancarlo Esposito and Rufus Sewell, along with the poor man's Cockney Sisto, Jay Courtney, and the poor man's Joshua Jack Quaidson, whose name is Peter Mark Kendall. I actually don't think I get how the episodes get ordered for different viewers. I'm only like 2.5 episodes in. I also don't think this is essential viewing, but the algorithm was like weirdly insistent that I watch it. Like usually Netflix is like, hey, we added this, FYI. And then like they'll send me a little pop-up on the phone like the next day to be like, you know, just a reminder if you were actually going to watch this, still here. All right, take care. For Kaleidoscope, they were just like, hey, so Kaleidoscope, how about now? Kaleidoscope? And I was like, fine. Then they busted out a bug cam that was inside the spine of a book less than 2 minutes in. And I was like, okay, algorithm, you know what's up. They clearly thought they had bunt nip on their hands, and they are not wrong. But again, I don't think it's essential. I also don't think it's quite hotel TV, but the pleasure is in the world building. New York City is a minor character in the show. I don't hate that. Gus Fring is always a smile to spend time with. And if you like Leverage or you like becoming becalmed in the Poppy Fields movies of the Oceans franchise, properties that don't try to reinvent the wheel, but they have a deep knowledge of and affection for all the processy heist story wheels that came before it. Kaleidoscope is diverting. It's nice to look at. It doesn't sniff its own farts too much, at least in the early going. I'm going to keep going with it. And I'd love to talk to you guys on the Extra Hot Great Discord, if you're Patreon supporters, about what order you got the episodes in and whether you think it matters. Because in the past, when they tried to do this with a like crime property, I just watched them in cron order and then I shuffled them up. But I get what they're doing, but I think it just doesn't match up with the media the way it does in a book. I did not watch it because it was based on a true story, because my esteemed colleague Eve wrote about that clickbait strat last week on the newsletter that we publish, Best Evidence. It is a true crime review newsletter, and this could have been any heist. The particular bearer bonds that they're talking about, it wasn't even a heist situation. I will link to that right up in the show notes. And speaking of crimes, some of the Grammys choices for Record of the Year are felonies. Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is discussing all of them in our upcoming season, Record of the Year Showdown. So get ready to commit justifiable homicide on us for getting Volare stuck in your heads. The new season hits January 16th, wherever you get your podcasts. But if you want to vote on stuff and plot with your fellow listeners on the Mastest Discord, there's only one place to do that, and that's patreon.com/mastass, M-A-S-T-A-S.
All right, coming up on Extra, Extra Hot Great this Friday, it is episode 221. Holy cow, that's a lot of episodes. Globetrotting Globetrotters, in which we insert the Harlem Globetrotters, you know, as is their want, you know, to guest star on a TV show, see Gilligan's Island, except inappropriate answers only. So only where they kind of don't belong. And then we'll explain what they're doing in that TV show. And they're right here. Next week on EHG Prime, we welcome back our good friend Omar Gallega to talk about the HBO adaptation of the video game The Last of Us. Don't miss that.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Ah, that music can only mean one thing. It is time for the evil goateed twin of the canon. It is the No Knack, a bad episode, but otherwise good show. Take it away, Mademoiselle Caroline.
Hi, Mademoiselle Caroline here, presenting Supernatural, Season 15, Episode 11, for the Nonak. Yep, that's right. Little Winchester fan here is going to trash the show she loves so much. So settle in. So it's clear that Supernatural continued way beyond its natural stopping point, and to a certain extent, the reasoning was at least humanly justifiable. The crew was super tight. Most of them were lifers from season one to the bitter end. The show meant financial stability to so many of them. I totally get that. But then you commit to it creatively. You don't phone it in. So what makes this episode extra special? Well, you need a little context for that. When season 14 limped to its finale, they surprisingly stumbled upon an excellent premise for season 15. The idea was God created the boys and made their lives miserable for his own amusement and entertainment. When the boys discovered that, they expressed their displeasure. And so God got miffed and said, "Fine, fine, you ungrateful brats. I'm going to take away everything that made your life easier. Dean will suddenly have the liver of a man who drank gallons of whiskey. Everyone will get cavities and money troubles. And worst of all your past foes that you've managed to defeat are going to come back." So there it is, the promise of season 15. The return of all the fans' favorite villains from previous seasons, while the boys are down on their luck. Except, nah, fast forward a few months later, and that promise never came to fruition. But episode 11 is especially unbelievable. I guess either Jensen or Jared or both said, "Okay, we don't feel like working this week, so we'll stay on one set. Thank you very much. And we'll play pool for an hour. Sounds fun?" By then, you could tell the showrunner was so not the boss on that show. So this is it. They go to a miserable-looking pool joint in the middle of nowhere. We are supposed to believe that the goddess of luck has decided to call it home for reasons. The concept adds insult to injury because the idea of an item that brings you luck but then turns on you and eventually kills you has been used beautifully before on a beloved episode of season 3. And that was so much fun. The characters here dare refer to that episode. If you want to watch 40 minutes of fun action and funny comebacks, watch Bad Day at Black Rock, Season 3, Episode 3. You won't regret it. But here we are watching uncharismatic guest stars playing pool with Dean and Sam for what feels like hours. What about stakes, you ask? None whatsoever, I say. Eventually they lose, the goddess wins, everybody's going to die. Except no, because the lady who's been scamming humans for millennium, has been touched by their heroic, generous hearts and wants to see them succeed in their quest, which the boys learn from guest star number 5 instead of the lady herself. Apparently, like everything and everybody else in this episode, she couldn't be bothered. There's a B-plot involving Castiel and sometimes Antichrist, sometimes Savior, Jack. Like the rest of the episode, it's slow and not interesting. The show keeping on repeating their one joke, Castiel's alias, is not a cool old rock star name. It's a girl singer's name. Here it's Lizzo. Ha ha. To sum up, this episode is bad, lazy, a real waste of time. But it's even more egregious when you know that this was supposed to be their last hurrah. They were supposed to light all the fireworks. Instead, they made all the fans feel like Charlie Brown when Lucy kicks the football. So dump it in the Nonax slush pit, why don't ya?
Thank you, Caroline. Eve, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
I'm trying to remember when I really quit Supernatural. I was never like a super Supernatural. I know that there's a term for it. I don't know what it is.
Soupies.
Soupies. Oh, God. Oh, no. Don't at me. Dave said it, not me. But, you know, I would watch it. Like, it would be on, I would watch it. There was less TV back when Supernatural started, too.
In the 1840s.
We had the Dumont Network and Supernatural.
But wasn't it kind of like, I'm just trying to remember, I feel like Supernatural was sort of like the Buffy methadone or something. Like, it came around right when Buffy was ending, and so they're sort of like, here you go. And so I feel like that's sort of how I, you know, started paying attention to it. And then after a while, it felt like, well, I'm in it now. I gotta ride this thing to the end. And then one day, all of a sudden, I was like, no, I don't. I'm just a person. I don't have to do this. This is not my job. And it was before this episode. And so what I was curious about as a Nonak is, how is this Nonak year than a lot of the other Supernatural episodes that started popping up when they churned out those 20 a year? And that's what I was trying to figure out with this one. Like, when I saw it, I'm like, it's all the standard stuff. They're in the car. Dean's a smug cunt. You know, the other guy is the other guy. And it's all, it just seemed like very standard. And then there's a B plot that's incomprehensible. The previously is last 20 minutes. And so that's what I was sort of trying to figure out. And I wanted to hear a presentation that would help me understand it. And that was a great presentation. And I always enjoy that listener's presentation. So I'm really glad that it came from her. But I'm still trying to figure out, why is this that much worse?
It feels like this is an affront to like the fans only. Like, this wasn't an engaging episode. I wasn't like, yeah, no, this is actually a good episode. Like, I was kind of bored by it.
Right.
One of the problems, I think, is that I thought they actually should have leaned into the one location only and really went a little deeper on this whole now I'm unlucky thing. Like, what this needed, and Supernatural strikes me as the kind of show that is always injecting humor into the action and into the, you know, the scares and stuff like that, much like, you know, Buffy did. The scene at the start that opens it up, where we have Leonard, just to some dude, going to the pool hall where you bet your personal luck when you play pool. By the way, that should have been called Killiards, is what they should have called it. He loses and he has no more luck. And he's like, oh, darn it. And he's just like walking around. And he just walks out in the road, gets splattered by a giant bus. I wanted like one of those every 5 minutes. Like, that would have like really sold this whole thing. And
just like the sound of it when they're inside the pool hall, occasionally you just hear a splat from outside. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. It's like, yeah, fuck you guys. Womp.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Sold.
Wanted more of that. I thought would have made the episode better. But for me, this was just sort of like a meh episode. Like, there were some moments where I was like, wow, that was dumb. And I kind of love it for it. And I'll play one of the clips for it. The character of Fortune, the god, the, you know, the Roman god of fortune, ends up being the bar owner. And that's why you're betting your luck and your fortunes either get better or not. But the whole thing is that you become addicted to, you know, winning, and you never actually truly win. And the Winchesters win one match. And then there's like a double or nothing scenario. And Fortune's like, all right, I'll play you again, double nothing. And this is that scene. Great line here.
Then play me for it.
I played you already.
Then we go again.
When I play someone, I get a read on them. And you, you're just a beach read. Sexy. Skimmable.
Beach read. Lady, I'm Tolstoy.
Lady, I'm Tolstoy. That's definitely going somewhere.
Even the background actors are like, asshole says what?
There's some other parts of the production that I enjoyed. There is a scene when they first get near the billiards hall. They're at a diner in town. And this is the audio act out.
Hey, you guys drive an Impala? I think you have a flat.
Oh, poor Metallicar.
Bad luck.
And the other act out's really great. They meet a kind of a cowboy looking dude, kind of like your budget Sam Elliott. And he is there because he has cancer. And this is the act out involving him. Again, just an audio delight.
Been saving this.
Cigarette.
Okay, I won't start smoking. Jeez.
This is just a lot of puzzling sort of first draft decisions with the act outs on this episode. And I was entertained by them, not necessarily for the reasons I think the creator imagined. Yeah. This wasn't a good episode, but I don't think it's like no-knack worthy, but I understand that it feels like if you've been in it for the 24 years prior to this that the show's been running, and there's a promise of Billy Joel's Greatest Hits Volumes 1 and 2 coming at you, and you never got it, you know, that you are kind of upset with this episode being sort of a watered-down version of something you've seen before. I get that, but that's not me. I'm not that audience. I think you would need a panel of Supernatural fans to really sell this argument.
Soupies. Sarah.
I absolutely agree with Dave that this was, there were elements of this episode that I was annoyed by, starting with Jared Padalecki's continued styling as like the floppy haired kid brother. He looks so uncannily valleyed and facelifted and weird, and like his face was polished.
Yeah, you know that meme picture of Nicolas Cage where they've like turned his hair and his weird hairline into like a bird?
Yeah.
That's what Jared Padalecki's hair is like at this stage of Supernatural's run. It's so big and wide for no reason.
But also that haircut does not match that man's contemporary hairline.
No.
Like those I'll don't point out, together.
It's the same haircut Lasher has in Mayfair Witches.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Anyway, it is. Sarah, you were saying.
So that was like upsetting. And the whole premise of the magic pool hall is explained and re-explained too many times. And it just sounds like if the CW tried to do the Black Lodge. So it was like the beige lodge or like the grayish, the industrial grayish lodge. No. Cass, the actor playing Cass, sucks at acting. Sorry. The previouslys that go on forever and there's like people eating hearts and we're supposed to be like, oh my gosh, shocking. He's eating a heart.
He was eating it like a burrito.
Yes. Like it's such a campy way that it was like 2-for-1 heart tacos. Like what are we doing? And the Latin, like commit to the Latin. Don't do this charmed crapton thing. Like Atrox Fortuna. Like, okay, we all know what Fortuna is. Her kid's name is Pax. We all know that's peace, but like Atrox, that's the root of atrocity. What, like, please get a Latin dictionary. Call me. It's fine. Don't annoy the Latin nerds. It's not good, especially with a show like this. It wasn't Atrox. It wasn't atrocious. It was just like a baffling amount of backstory and like an increasingly sort of flamboyantly nonsensical, and then Pucci went back to his home planet, solutioned story, like season arc for this show, that was part of the show's appeal when they could sort of lean into it and pay it off, which it sounds like they couldn't this time. But as Dave said, it also sounds like people like us who sort of would watch it passing through the hotel room, getting ready for a meeting out of town, are not going to know this, are not going to have the context for how sort of personally offended and like aggrieved a fan of the show would be by this episode versus us just being like, yeah, this is a C minus, but I'm not angry. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the plot of this episode could have been just lifted and inserted into Xena with any problems whatsoever?
Xena or X-Files or Buffy, like any of those, truly.
Or Helix or Next Generation, like any kind of syndicated, long-running sci-fi-y...
Burn Notice.
Show. Burn Notice.
Yeah.
Mad Men. I mean, look, it's fine. I feel that Mademoiselle Caroline's grievances are legitimate and sincere, but I don't think I was aggrieved enough by this. Like, I think that all her points are correct. She's like, nobody involved in the production of this gave a shit. Like, now that you mention it, word.
Yeah.
But I am not invested enough to be no-knack mad at it.
Yeah. No-knack mad is a good phrase.
I don't have a ton to add on what Sarah and Dave said. I was hoping that Eve would have more clarifying fire to add to what Caroline started. Because, yeah, I feel the same way. Like, it, you know, I don't think that we certainly have considered at least one Supernatural for the canon, and I don't believe we voted it in. But I have yet to see an episode of this show that I feel was canon worthy, and God, that's not a challenge. Like, I'm just saying, like, if a show for me hasn't so far risen to the level of being, you know, canonizable, then by the transitive property, I don't think it's no-knackable either. Like, all the things you said are true. It's not a good episode, and having the context that Caroline brought to it gives a little more, you know, context, I guess, like explaining where it is in the series run and what they were trying to do and how it fell short and all that. I get it, but we are not the panel that's qualified to make this judgment that she's asking us to.
You need a subcommittee for this one.
We actually did vote season 5, episode 8, Changing Channels, into the canon in the hundreds somewhere.
I remember.
Yeah, I was going to say, I taught that in a class, and it's like, you know, if any episode of Supernatural were going to get in, that was the one. I guess it caught us on a good day. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's well done. Like, the show at its best still never quite gets past a B+. But that's absolutely the class of what the show has to offer. I just don't think it's like, because of the nature of what it is, I don't think it can be egregious to us.
Right.
I will say, just as a little note on Tara's, that I think you could get a mid-show that would never have a canon entry also have a no-knack, because, you know, if you get a serious, ill-advised, stupid shit show of an episode in, like, I don't know, like Will and Grace or something. Well, Will and Grace, I know you like, but okay, insert your own mid-show here.
Sure.
I think,
like,
it would work.
They tried to do a live episode of Castle.
Okay. Fair. I did think it was funny that we got so many loving shots of pool, because it does seem like Jensen Ackles is really good at pool for real, and that might have been part of the impetus for this episode's existence, where it's sort of like any time on 90210 we saw Brandon skating, like whether it made sense or not, and it generally didn't. They live in Los Angeles. But that was my one sort of like, oh, that's sweet. But the rest of it is just like, it was just a shrug for me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Two last notes. One, I really want that world map table of theirs that was at like Supernatural HQ, whatever that was. And second, why is Cass dressed exactly like Constantine from DC Comics? Like exactly the same. That was weird. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Eve Beatty, what say you? No knack worthy or not?
Not.
Sarah D. Bunting.
With respect for the processing of Mademoiselle Caroline's trauma, it's a not for me as well.
Tara Arrieta?
Same.
All right, I'm going to go slow. So that means, unfortunately, that Supernatural Season 15, Episode 11, the Gamblers, who are hereby not inducted into the extra hot great Nonag.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's Abbott Elementary. They are setting an initiative to donate up to $1 million matched to American teachers through donorschoose.org. Obviously, I approve every micron of that message. But this is not the first time that the show has done something like this. They had a similar setup with Scholastic to fund book fairs. And we'll link that in the show notes because it's a pretty cool setup so that people can get involved, not at the like schmancy five figure level. It's donations up to $200. So get the knack. Donors Choose is a great org.
And who is our loser of the week, Dara?
Well, we have a bunch of Real Housewives. I'm going to do them in order of shame level, least to most. Diana Jenkins, a person, she is departing the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills after one season. The announcement of her leaving is literally the first time I've ever heard of her. But another item that came out this same week is that she is suing the anonymous owner slash author of the gossip blog Crazy Days and Nights for defamation. So if you've heard of her, that might be why. Next, also from Beverly Hills, Lisa Rinna, the Melrose Place alumna herself and vintner as of recently, is leaving slash has possibly been fired from Beverly Hills after months of speculation that she would be. I don't know all of the particulars of her deal because I don't watch the show, but basically it seems like she's a terrible person and no one is sad that she's gone. Lisa Vanderpump's tweet after the announcement came out on a Friday was ding dong, which is like, okay, not bad. Andy Cohen has said he hopes she will come back, where it's like, she didn't have to leave. Like, you're the boss, aren't you? But yeah. Anyway, I'm sure he means on one of the like weird girls trip shows where they dump like all of the losers from other seasons who've left. Alex McCord is coming back to one of those, apparently from New York. And finally, the most shame level, Jen Shah of Salt Lake City has been sentenced to 6.5 years in prison for, as I understand it, several counts of wire fraud and basically going after credulous old people in her various schemes. Bad stuff. And they threw the book at her. So that's your week in Housewives embarrassing themselves.
Speaking about going after old people, you know what time it is?
Oh,
it's rude.
I'm fired. Game time.
It's game time. All right, everybody, it is once again game time. It's been a while since we've had a regulation game time, so let me refresh your memory. This is the 8th game of the current season. Tara has 3. Value guests have 4. If Eve wins today, it's all over for this season. Sarah's still looking to get on the board. Today, we're playing Chicken or Egg from Mr. Rob Hartman is back.
Hey!
He earned himself an extra credit topic of his choosing. He writes, players have to choose which show debuted first.
Ooh.
If they choose correctly, they get an additional point for naming the year that the earlier show debuted. So guess which show? And if you guess correctly, you get a chance at that additional point, which is the actual year. That is all there is to it.
Okay.
Let's throw it to Piggy to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. We're going to go Eve, Sarah, Tara. 5 question sets apiece. I'm going to give you a rapid fire 3 in a row.
Oh, okay.
Just to keep things moving. Okay. 1 Grossworth Equalizer challenge zone. Are we ready to play chicken or egg?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. We're starting with Eve. You're going to name which show started first, House or Monk? House or Monk?
Monk.
Monk started first. Yes. Monk indeed started first. Here's your chance for your bonus point. In what year did Monk debut? What year?
2004.
That's actually the year House started. 2002 was Monk. All right, here's your second one, Eve. Atlanta or Fargo?
Fargo.
Fargo, correct. What year was Fargo?
2016.
2016 was Atlanta. Fargo, 2 years earlier, 2014. Succession or Empire?
Empire.
Correct. What year did Empire start?
Oh, this is embarrassing because I wrote about it for you guys. 2015?
2015 is correct. That's four points for your set there. All right, moving on to Sarah D. Bunting. Carrie Diaries, Gossip Girl. Gossip Girl, the original.
Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl is correct. What year did Gossip Girl start?
2009?
Incorrect, 2007. Carrie Diaries, much later, 2013. Still to Sarah. The Mindy Project, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Mindy Project.
That is correct. What year did that show start?
2014.
2012, with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend being 2015. All right, last one of your first set. Little Ellen, Young Sheldon.
Oh, Jesus.
Which started first?
Little Ellen?
Incorrect. Little Ellen was 2021, Young Sheldon 2017.
Wow. That show's been on for a long time.
He's got to be freshman Sheldon, right?
I think he might have been in high school when it started. So he's, he's
old. All right, Tara, ready for your first set?
Yes.
Legends of Tomorrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is correct. What year did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. begin?
2012?
Close. Ooh. 2013.
Damn.
Legends of Tomorrow, 2016. Here's your second set.
Yep.
iZombie.
Yep.
Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, no. They were both so around the same time. iZombie?
That is correct. What year was iZombie?
2015?
Yes, 2015 is the correct year. Nicely done. Oh. Extra point there. Last one of your first set, Tara.
Yep.
The Mysterious Benedict Society, the Umbrella Academy.
Umbrella Academy.
Man. Umbrella Academy started first. Yes. What year did the Umbrella Academy start?
2018?
Ooh, 2019. Mysterious Benedict Society was 21. All right, we are back to Eve. We have The Real Housewives of Orange County and Desperate Housewives.
Desperate Housewives.
Is correct. What year did that show start?
2007?
Quite a bit earlier than that, in 2004.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Same year as Lost. Jesus. Hope that doesn't come up later. Whoops.
90 Day Fiancé, still to Eve. And Married at First Sight.
No.
Picky. 90 Day Fiancé.
You are correct. Which year did that show start?
Son of a bitch. 2012?
2014. January 12th, 2014, 90 Day Fiancé. July 8th, 2014, for Married at First Sight. Same year debut. Teen Mom, 16 and Pregnant.
Teen Mom.
Incorrect. 16 and Pregnant beat Teen Mom by about 6 months in 2009.
Yeah, Teen Mom was a spinoff.
I believe you mean by two trimesters.
All right, back to Sarah. The Vampire Diaries and True Blood.
Vampire Diaries.
No, that started September 09, True Blood, September 08, 1 year earlier.
Oh, okay.
All right, here's your second set. Red Shoe Diaries and Silk Stocking.
Red Shoe Diaries.
No. Oh, I would have said that too.
1991 versus 1992.
Yikes.
Oh, boy.
All right, here's your final of this set. The Flight Attendant or Dead to Me?
Shit. They're close together. I think it is... which one started first?
Yep.
Dead to Me.
That is correct. Now, what year was Dead to Me?
2019.
Yes, 2019.
Hey!
A year and a half later for The Flight Attendant. Mm. All right, we are back to Tara.
Yep.
Boardwalk Empire, Deadwood.
Deadwood.
Deadwood is correct. What year was Deadwood?
2005?
2004, March. Boardwalk Empire, much later, September 2010. This is question 17.
The Spread Eagle.
Oh, Spread Eagle.
It is for Tara.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good one.
Okay.
Pan Am and the Playboy Club.
Oh, God. They were, I'm pretty sure, both the same year. So which one was first? I think it's Pan Am. Shit.
The Playboy Club was 6 days earlier on September 19th, 2009.
Bastard. Good right. for him.
Victoria and the Crown.
Is it still for me?
Yeah, still for you.
The Crown.
The Crown is correct. It was the first of those two, but what year did the Crown start?
I think it was 2015. 16.
November 4th, 2016. All right, we are moving on to Eve. This is question 19. Mind Hunter, and Aquarius.
Mickey.
Shit. Shit. Oh, man. Aquarius.
Which was first?
Aquarius.
Aquarius was
nice.
First. What year was it?
Oh, boy. 2015?
Yeah!
Wow. Only right. good thing that show ever did for anybody.
David Duchovny could not have gotten that right.
Oh, no. I used it. There was a door on it I once used as style inspiration. But
nice.
Westworld. Humans. Heard of them.
Humans.
Yes, Humans was the first. What year did it start?
2013?
Way too early. 15.
Yeah. Really?
And Westworld was 2016.
Yeah.
I thought that was all so right. much earlier.
Here's the last of your triptych. Silicon Valley, Halt and Catch Fire.
Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley is correct. What year?
2012?
2014.
Really?
That was April. Halt and Catch Fire, same year in June.
Mm.
Very close together. All right, we'll move back to Sarah D. Bunting. We've got Station 11 and Station 19.
Rude. Station 19?
Yes, that was first, but what year? One more point if you can get the year.
2020.
A little earlier than that, 2018. Spring of 2018. Okay. The Mick and the Nick.
The Nick.
You are correct.
Yay!
What year was the Nick? Why didn't you just tell me the movie you want to see? It was the cadence there.
20.
So far, you're correct.
17.
That was the Mick's year of debut. The Nick, 3 years earlier, 2014.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Golly.
I'm placing all of these based on like where we were living at the time.
I'm trying to, like, where were we recording the Extra Hot Great episodes about them? Was I on 17th Street then?
Right.
Well, that strategy will work for one half of this, as I give you, Sarah. Mayor of Kingstown, Mayor of Easttown. Which is earlier?
Kingstown?
Kingstown 6 months or so later than Mayor of Easttown's April 2021.
Right.
All right, this set is for Tara. At the end of our set, we will go into a score break.
Okay.
Tara?
Yep.
We've got the Doctor Who reboot.
Right.
And the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Oh, God.
Both debuted in the UK first, so those are the dates. For
okay. I'm pretty sure Doctor Who was first. Shit.
Incorrect. That was 2005. Battlestar Galactica, about six, seven months Space. Earlier, October 2004.
Okay.
Tara?
Yeah.
The Will and Grace reboot.
Yeah.
The Mad About You reboot.
Oh, Will and Grace.
Yes. What year was that?
2017.
Yes, that is correct.
Wow.
Mad About
really?
You 2 years later. All right, here's your last question of the set.
Yep.
Saved by the Bell reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Fuller House.
Fuller House.
That is correct. What year?
Well, we were still in Hawaii. 2016?
That is correct as we
nice
go into
pull.
Our score break. Going to need them scores, please, Tara.
Oh, my God. Well, it's pretty exciting because Eve and I are tied with 10 points each.
Yep.
Sarah barely behind with 6. And this Equalizer Challenge Zone could change everything!
Now, to refresh your memories, we now have 4 exciting choices for the Gross Worth
That's
Equalizer
right.
Challenge Zone. So, Sarah, you've got your old favorite Purple Box TV.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Pop Culture 2 set. We've got mm-hmm. the special 90s edition of Trivial Pursuit. And we also have the super generic television trivia, which is one question from each decade from the 50s on.
I'm going to do that last one.
All right.
Good luck.
All right.
Thank
so
you.
This is for 4 points and then 8 if she runs the card?
Let's do 3
no,
and 6.
I think it's 2 and then 4 if I run the
let's
card.
Let's do 3 right? and 6. Let's split the difference.
All right.
Sure. All right.
Good luck.
All right.
Thank you.
Your 1950s question is, how many years did the comedy I Love Lucy run? How many years?
Years. 7.
Ooh, very close. 6. 6.
Ah.
In 1960, who replaced James Garner in the TV classic Maverick?
It's James Garner.
Garner.
Gardner.
No, not Gardner.
In 1960, who replaced James Garner? Let's try Clint Eastwood. Bug it.
Roger Moore.
Wow. Real vibe change there.
You need to get the 70s, 80s, 90s to get your points. What was Captain Pierce's nickname on MASH?
Hawkeye.
Who was J.R. Ewing's brother on Dallas?
Bobby.
Need this one to get your 3 points. On South Park, which character wears a blue hat with a red pom-pom?
Well, it's not...
I'm trying to send the answer to you.
That other
guy. Me too.
It's the one whose name I don't.
We're going to need an answer, Sarah D. Bunting.
Cartman.
No, it's not Cartman. Who is it, guys?
Kyle.
Oh, I just
incorrect.
Did
it's
not.
Stan.
That's what the thing I was trying to send you, and for some reason, Kyle came out of my mouth.
Uh-huh. Kyle's.
Kyle's.
All right.
Microcomp.
So no change in scores. Let's get back to it. We're back to Eve with According to Jim and King of Queens. We need the show that started earlier, debuted earlier.
According to Jim.
No. What? I would have totally answered that too.
I would too.
King of Queens, 98. According to Jim, 2001.
Wow.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
A lot of bad shit happened that
All right,
year.
Still you, Eve. Coach. Major Dad.
Oh, man. Coach?
Yes, Coach did start first. What year?
88.
Oh, 89.
Oh, wow.
6 months earlier than Major Dad. Same year. Full House, My Two Dads, still the Eve.
Full House. Wow.
Really?
No, My Two Dads started 2 days earlier. Whole House on September 20th, 1987. Man. That was just a coin toss. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, Hannah Montana, Lizzie McGuire.
Lizzie McGuire.
That is correct. What year?
2003.
Wow, I would have been so impressed if you got that.
2001. The start of 2001 for Lizzie McGuire. Spring 2006 for Hannah Montana.
Hannah Montana.
Aristocrat.
Yeah. Hannah Montana. Say hello to my little friend.
Do you chance have any Grey Poupon?
I just missed your eye, y'all.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Mm-hmm.
Blossom.
Mm-hmm.
Clarissa Explains It All.
Blossom?
Yes. What year?
88.
91. Right at the start of 91. Okay. Clarissa a couple months later. Sister, Sister. Moesha.
Sister, Sister.
Yes. What year? And I'll just let you know, it debuted on April Fool's Day.
Oh, that one.
Yep.
2002.
1994 versus 1996.
Sorry, ladies.
Back to Tara.
You have tied it up. Yes.
Boy Meets World. Saved by the Bell.
Ooh, Saved by the Bell.
Correct. What year was Saved by the Bell?
87? 8.
9.
Damn.
August 20th. Boy Meets World, 1993. Much later. Yeah. Everybody Hates Chris. Mm. Malcolm in the Middle.
Malcolm in the Middle.
What year was Malcolm in the Middle?
99?
January 9th, 2000.
Shit.
Everybody Hates Chris, 2005. All right, here's the last of your set. Mm-hmm. Doogie Howser, MD.
Right.
The Wonder Years.
Oh, God. I think they were both the same year. Wonder Years?
You are correct. What year?
88.
January 3rd. Doogie Howser, 89.
Damn.
Back to Eve. This is everybody's last set.
Okay.
Of
all right,
three.
So what are the scores right now?
Eve and Sarah are tied with 10 each. I am barely ahead with 13.
It's been a while, 13. Folks. We're getting back into the groove. All right. Eve.
With your score plus 3 is what my head meant.
The L word, Queer as Folk, U.S. version.
Queer as Folk.
What year was that?
92?
Ooh. 2000.
Fuck.
L world. Wow, really? L world? Oh, yeah, it's like first they did L word and then like Jurassic Park, they advanced to L world. And that's when the lesbians run amok and there's like carnage everywhere. That's 2004.
Chris Pratt's like this with lesbians.
Enjoy your death trap world. All right. Queer Eye Reboot, Eve. RuPaul's Drag Race.
Drag Race.
Yes. What year was Drag Race?
2007?
That's what I would have said.
2009.
Mm. Oh.
And Queer Eye Reboot much later, 2008.
Yeah.
Heartstopper. And Love, Victor, for Eve.
Love, Victor?
Correct. What year was that?
It's during the pandemic. Can't we just say that and it covers all of them?
It's in that blob of time.
Yeah. Was it 21?
2020. June 20.
God damn it. See? During the pandemic.
All right. Sarah D. Bundy.
Yeah.
The Rockford Files. And Columbo.
Columbo.
That is correct. What year did Columbo start?
1971.
1968.
Oh, shit. That's right. Wow.
Rockford Files, 1974. Still to Sarah D. Bunting. Scarecrow and Mrs. King. Heart to Heart.
Scarecrow?
Heart to Heart, 79. Scarecrow and Mrs. King, 83. All right, here's your last of your set. Sarah D. Bunting, Walker, Texas Ranger. Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Ooh. That's diabolical.
That is.
Like, you know what you're getting. You know the character and what they do.
That's right.
All TV shows. That should be a quiz.
Name, comma,
yeah,
job.
That's a good quiz.
Michael Knight, have her a very long list.
Yes.
Dr. Quinn versus Walker. I think it is Dr. Quinn.
Yeah, you're right.
Nice.
What year? Both debuted the same year. What year?
80. No. Shit. I don't know. 92.
Oh, 93.
Damn.
Get this. January 1st, 1993.
Wow.
You're off by one day, technically.
Shit.
All right, Tara.
Fuckers. Yeah.
The Munsters and the Addams Family.
I'm pretty sure Addams Family.
You are correct. By 6 days.
Okay. Wow.
What
really?
Year? Yep.
Really?
Oh, what year? 1960. Five.
Or Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Captain Kangaroo.
Oh, God. Those shows I hated as a kid. Mr. Rogers. Shit.
Oh, Mr. Rogers, 13 years later than Captain Kangaroo's 1955 debut.
You are kidding me.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm shocked.
Captain Kangaroo's old. That was starting black and white.
Shit.
Yeah. All right, here's your last one, Tara.
Yep.
Lassie, Flipper.
Lassie.
What year was Lassie?
Oh, God. Yeah. 1954.
Flipper, 1964. Took 10 years to go from dog to dolphin.
To develop communicating dolphin technology.
All right. Everybody's got one little last thing left, but let's hear the scores.
This ended up being a very, very close game. Sarah has 12. Eve has 13. I have 15.
I'll let you know it's still anybody's game.
Okay,
we have one more question apiece. This is the four-point round. I'm going to read you three shows. You tell me which one started first, per usual. And if you get that right, you guess the year on every one of these.
Oh, shit.
But if you
don't
get the first question right, you lose the chance for all your extra points.
Okay.
So, Eve, are you ready for this one? I'm going to give you three shows.
Yeah.
Enlightened, United States of Tara.
Tara.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. The Big C. Enlightened, United States of Tara. Tara. The Big C.
But I'm only doing the first. Which one was first?
First, you need to tell me which one was first. And then if you get that right,
you got a chance for big points.
I think that United States of Terra was first.
You are correct.
Hey!
All right. Nice.
Now I want the year of, let's start with United States of, what order we do it? Give me the year of Enlightened was first in the list.
First. Enlightened.
I can't give you any clues as to
I got it.
Right.
Got it. So Enlightened. I'm gonna get this wrong. Enlightened 2000 and fart.
2000 fart.
2000 and fart. 2013.
No, that is incorrect.
That's what I said.
United States of Tara.
United States of Tara. Sorry. It's just a habit.
He said it wrong first.
You're right there.
I come by it honestly, though.
Yeah.
True.
That one.
Because I'm stupid.
2012?
And the Big
man.
C. The Big C.
The Big C, 2016.
No, nothing right.
God damn it.
United States of Terra was 2009. The Big C was 2010. Enlightened was 2011.
That was way off.
All right.
Damn. Crazy.
Sarah D. Bunting, get ready for your big point opportunity?
Not really, but let's do it anyway.
Here are your shows. Game of Thrones, The Tudors, The Borgias.
Oh, jeez.
Thrones, Tudors, Borgias.
Oh, boy. Tutors.
Correct.
Yeah!
All right, you have unlocked your chance for bonus points. Game of Thrones, what year?
2012.
That's not correct. Tutors.
2010.
Horses.
2010.
Tudors, 2007.
Ugh.
4 years later, both Borgias and Game of Thrones.
All right,
okay. Tara, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Everwood, no. One Tree Hill, and The O.C.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Ouch.
They are tightly packed.
Yeah, they are. Crap. I'm pretty sure O.C. is first.
O.C. is... Incorrect!
Oh, wow. All right.
Everwood was first in 2002. OC, just under a year later, 2003.
Wow.
And September, 1 month later than the OC, was One Tree Hill. Very closely packed together.
Everwood is old enough to drink?
Crazy.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's hear the final regulation scores, please.
All right, it got even closer. Sarah finished with 13, Eve 14, I had 15.
Ooh, all right, squeaker. Woo. All right, I got a couple tiebreakers we'll display for shits and grins. These are just the twos. I'll give one, let's see here. Let's have Eve and let's have our second and third place players play these ones.
Kay.
So Eve, we've got Tales from the Crypt versus Tales from the Dark Side. Which one started first? Dark Side or Crypt? Comma, Tales from the...
Dark Side.
Dark Side was indeed first, yes.
Wow.
What year did it start?
Oh, geez. 77?
Oh, no, much later. 84. 84 for that one.
Hmm. Oh, my God. I remember being terrified of it. Now I feel like a dummy.
So does she get one steel meal for that?
Yeah, let's give her one steel meal for that. Sarah D. Bunting, Flip That House, Flip This House. I'm going to let you know there's a difference of less than 2 weeks in between.
What?
Flip that and flip this. So, you know.
I'm flipping it right now.
Sure.
Let's go with this.
Hey!
I mean, that's the correct order. It's got to be 50, flip this 50, house, flip 50. That house.
Analyze this, analyze that.
Exactly.
There's an order to the universe.
I'm saying.
What year?
This.
Hey.
What year?
That was Sarah giving me the bird. Double bird.
It was.
All I'm doing is reading the questions, too.
I was giving the universe / Rob Hartman the bird.
All right, what year for Flip This, That House? Because they're both the same year.
They seem like they've always been on, but
yeah.
I know that can't be true. So let's say 2007.
You're 2 years off. That was 2005.
Wow.
Tara.
Tara.
All right. So that means next week we got a 4-4 situation. It could all be decided next week. Unless Sarah wins. So stay tuned for that. All right, guys, that is it, however, for this episode of Extra Hot Great. That's the confidence we like to see. We gathered around the cauldron for the second Rice-a-verse show for all those Rice-a-roni fans out there. Mayfair Witches, again, the TV show that sounds like there's a coven that is located inside of a supermarket, if you ask me, before going around the dial with stops at Harry and Meghan. Slow horses, the circle, and kaleidoscope. How come it was horses and not kaleidoscope that messed me up? We'll never know.
Also, I'd like to watch a show called Snow Hostess. I don't know what it's about. It sounds fun.
Caroline's luck didn't hold up for her nomination of the Gamblers episode of Supernatural. For the Nonak, we crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Rob. Next up, Globetrotter drop-ins, and on the next EHG Prime, it's The Last of Us. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
Mayfair, you've got just what I need.
the very confident Sarah D. Bundy.
Dude, lactate.
And Eve Beatty.
Well, since Dave didn't do it, slow horses.
Hey!
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Xylem mode's always an option.
That's one thing that episode got right. Fucking silence. Yeah. Those, oh God.
100%.